From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Jeff Sintel. Dog Nation Invasion has officially begun, and Jeff, what a night it was last night in New Orleans, seeing all the red and black clad Georgia fans all over the place. Waking up this morning, it's amazing. I was up very early getting ready to come over here. Once again, it's a whole another throng of sort of the early crowd of Georgia fans as opposed to the late night crowd that we saw last night. But the one theme that's a constant here is it is a Dog Nation Invasion in true form here, because everywhere you go and everywhere you look, there are Georgia fans all over the place. The excitement about this game on Saturday against LSU is about to reach a fever pitch, and I could not be more excited about myself.
You know, it's funny, Brandon. I guess the climate and the weather kind of lends itself to this, but I would say October in New Orleans feels like September in Chicago from a year ago.
A little bit.
You're walking around. You know, New Orleans is a great walking city, much like Chicago, and it feels like that little chill in the air. It feels like football, and this is another, I mean, people that have been doing these invasions now, Gainesville,
yeah,
Pasadena, you've got, you know, South Bend, you got Chicago, and now you've got New Orleans. This just feels like Georgia football now.
Yeah, it really does. We're going to talk to you a lot about it. Obviously, we're a little late getting on the air today. We want to apologize to you for that. Had a little technical glitch, but nonetheless, we're off and rolling now and ready to go. And as I said, it's a special edition of Dog Nation Daily because Jeff's Intel is here today, so we'll have him for the full hour today, and also we'll have plenty of your comments as well on both Facebook and YouTube as we do our part to set the stage and get folks ready for what's going to happen on Saturday. And Jeff, I was telling you a little earlier that, you know, the closer we get to the start of the game, the more, and I made this point on the show yesterday, the closer we get to the start of the game, the more I do think that the challenge for Georgia is significant enough that I expect it to be a close game. LSU lost last week, but that doesn't mean that LSU coming back at home, huge difference in the SEC between being at home and being on the road. Back at home, I think that LSU is still a formidable opponent. I'd be very surprised if this isn't an incredibly close game late into the fourth quarter, still very much in doubt. And that's a different kind of game in terms of the way you use personnel, the kinds of plays that you call there. Would you join me in saying that, hey, for Georgia fans who haven't had a lot of nail biters thus far this season, what's going to happen on Saturday might end up being that?
Yeah, that was some great statage you threw out the other day. I think those were some bears of stats and everything else. And here's an old sports writer tribe thing. Coming up, I knew a lot of guys that have been covering years and years, decades of games in the SEC. And what they always told me is they said, when you go to Baton Rouge, you better be 17 points better if you want to come out of there, yeah, with a win. You better be 14 to 17 points better if you think you're going to come out of there with a win. And I know the odds makers have it at around 8, Brandon. I think that's the MyBookie line that you're touting all this week.
It's been 7, 7.5, or 8 at one point in time, I believe. There's been a little bit of fluctuation there at MyBookie.
So I think that number is probably about 14 points. I think Georgia's probably about 14 points better than LSU, which means this, to me, is a numbers cruncher type game. I think this is one of those games where Georgia's going to have to play some of its very best brands of football to win. I mean, you heard people last night walking around the quarter, the lovely view we were at from the Hot 10. The Hot 10, it was a very nice place, very beautiful skyline of the city. If you're invading, I would advise you guys to check it out. Gentlemen out there, take your wife there. She will really appreciate that trip. But, you know, to me, a lot of people are thinking Georgia can really make a statement with this win, and I think most Georgia fans would be happy to just walk out of there with a win.
John Benton in our Facebook comment section says, it looks like you guys took over the ESPN studios today. So fancy. It really is. I can't thank enough Ashley and Brett and all the folks here from Manning's Sports Bar in Las Vegas for setting up what we have here. Our Dog Nation Invasion logo on the screen behind us here, it's a really cool thing. Got a great desk in front of us here. And if you're in New Orleans, we want to make sure you're aware of this. If you're in New Orleans, I know I've been telling you about this for the last couple of days, but I want you to remind yourself of this. If you're here in New Orleans at 3 p.m. local time, which is also 4 Eastern, but 3 p.m. local time, we're going to be back here later on today for our Dog Nation Invasion special. Now, if you can't be in New Orleans, if you can't be in Louisiana as a part of the Dog Nation Invasion, well, you're going to want to be watching the show because, Jeff, we put together a great broadcast today. We're going to hear from former Georgia quarterback DJ Shockley, former Georgia wide receiver Sean Bailey, former Georgia line linebacker Rennie Curran, a whole host of former Georgia players who've had big moments against LSU in the past. And that's not all. Courtesy of our friends at the UGA Vault, we're also going to go back and look at some of the great moments in Georgia LSU history. The game Kirby Smart played in 1998. We showed some of those highlights on Dog Nation Daily earlier this week, and Connor Riley, one of our producers, who's a good bit younger than I am, he and I were both remarking about what Quincy Carter looked like playing quarterback in that game. You know, catching a pass at one point in time, showing his versatility, big arm. Going back and seeing Quincy after all these years is actually a pretty staggering thing, because he was very good on the road there that day. So, courtesy of the UGA Vault, of course, I'll encourage you to download the UGA Vault app to get more of that kind of stuff yourself. But courtesy of the UGA Vault, with some great video, some Larry Munson highlights, some great interviews with former Dogs, we're going to do that show later on this afternoon, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern. And if you're here in New Orleans, come see us where we are right now on Fulton Street. It's Manning's. It's right next to the Harrah's. I know a lot of you know where that is because I saw a lot of you there last night. But Jeff, so people who you know see Manning's here on video, it's a reminder that they can come out and hang out with us a little bit later on this afternoon there as well.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I've had boots on the ground, Brandon, now since Wednesday, and I was kind of remarking with people in my traveling party yesterday. It's like we still have Friday and then half the day on Saturday to get to before the game takes place. And I would say that the fever is definitely around. You can just walk around and everybody notices this guy, and they give him the go Dogs and everything else like that. He's like, I'm waiting for the catchphrase to take phrase. It's like, what do you say, BA? I mean, it's coming. This is one of those things. This set, I think this is show number 802.
Yeah.
Man, we got to go uphill from this one, man, because this is a pretty good one. But there's a lot of energy right now in this town.
Blind Squirrel Sports on YouTube says, hey, BA, where's Eddie? Did he get lost on Bourbon Street somewhere? So here's the honest truth. I wanted to bring Eddie, our unofficial Dog Nation Daily mascot, and put him right here on the desk. Given my lack of organization, I was a little afraid that I might forget him in New Orleans. That would be like the end of the world. So I decided to let Eddie stay at home and take care of this one. We'll look forward to seeing him back here on Monday. Let me also read you another comment, Jeff. It comes from our Facebook comment section. Richard Kenmore says that he's confident about the Dogs on Saturday. He thinks they're going to show up and impose their will over LSU. And it's kind of funny. Even though I've been kind of making the case for why the game could be closer than some of the experts think, you know, you've heard certainly from a lot of other fans who have expressed that confidence know that this is the moment where Georgia really shows up and shows out. This is the moment when Georgia really flexes. That phrase, imposing will, is certainly an interesting one to use there. I think it's important to remember that when Georgia went on the road against South Carolina earlier in the season, that was a team that Georgia could easily impose its will on, because physically on both lines of scrimmage, Georgia's just more dominant. Now, I'm not going to tell you that LSU has an edge on the line of scrimmage against Georgia, but I will say that it's not quite as easy to shove them around as it would have been against South Carolina. Now, the LSU offensive line's had some turmoil. I don't think they've started the same five offensive linemen in any game yet this season.
Good point.
The LSU defensive line is probably not as good as it was a couple years ago. The Clavon Chessen injury from earlier in the season, I think, impacts their ability to rush the passer, but with Lawrence and Fihoko, that's still a pretty good group. So I hope that Richard Kenmore's right. I hope this is a game where Georgia imposes its will. But along the lines of scrimmage, where you think of wills typically be imposed, it's a little tougher to do that against LSU than it is against South Carolina. I think that's only fair to bring up.
I think that's, and listen, we've seen the script, Brandon. And by the way, I hope Eddie makes the trip to Jacksonville. He's got to make that one.
Yeah, he'll definitely have to make that one.
That's the game he makes sure he makes. That's his one road trip a year. But it's no secret. You're gonna hear coming out of the game plan when all said and done, physicality and composure. The recipe for winning the game in Baton Rouge for any football team, any of those SEC football teams, those Alabama championship level teams that went into LSU, it's they got to knock the other guy back, push him back, don't give up the run, run the football, and this is the way Georgia wins games like this. Is they're going to try to physically, you know, impose the will is a great way to say it. They just want to manhandle the opponent and make the other guy quit. And this is a football team, the way it's built. I mean, me being the recruiting guy, we and you were having a separate conversation. We got the Grayson Archer game going up now.
The replay from last night.
And yeah. I think this is the first time I've ever done a broadcast with you where there's nine TVs going on in front of us.
Uh-huh.
But Georgia doesn't want to bring in a lineman that's only 310 pounds right. in high school. They want to bring in those guys that are 330 already, really big, massive young men, and then they want to get them strengthened up in Sinclair's program and get them conditioned really well. I don't know what you're going to say, but Georgia in the fourth quarter will be running the football, and they will be leaning those 6'6", 340-pound, 330-pound linemen on LSU, hoping that they can break them.
All right, a couple points I want to get to here. That's Jeff Sintel. I'm Brandon Adams. Thanks for being a part of this very special edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Of course, we're live, like always, on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Of course, on the radio, we love being with our friends at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and podcast form all over the world. Of course, a little bit different kind of podcast today, so those of you who are normally listeners, we appreciate you putting up a little slightly different version of our program here live in New Orleans. We bring you coverage of Dog Nation Invasion. Of course, huge thanks to our Dog Nation Invasion sponsors as well. Kroger and Marlowe's, our friends from R.S. Andrews, and also Skyland Brookhaven. We appreciate you being a part of the event this weekend. Of course, Marco's Pizza every single day. We just like to say every day the Italian way. You can find them online, marcos.com, and take advantage of a great special offer. Two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. That is a great way to enjoy the weekend. A lot of football coming up if you're having a big party at your house for the game on Saturday. No better way to feed a whole bunch of people than with that great offer from Marco's. Authentic Italian quality pizza. Two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each. Check that out at marcos.com. All right, a couple things, Jeff, I want to take care of here. And then at a certain point, you mentioned recruiting. There are a couple of recruiting things that I do want to get your thoughts on here. So let me take care of a couple more things on the game kind of before we get there. So if I'm right and it ends up being a close game on Saturday, I think that's going to put a spotlight on a player that has very quickly here become an incredible fan favorite. You're in Sanford Stadium every single Saturday, Jeff. I think you would join me in saying that the ovation that the kicker, Rodrigo Blankenship, gets when they announce the starting lineups, yeah, it's as loud as really any player in the entire roster. No one gets more cheers than Rodrigo. Some people get as many as. No one really gets more cheers than Blankenship does. And this is the kind of game that's a Rodrigo game, right? I mean, we saw him last week with the 50-plus yard field goal. Also the touchbacks, making sure that you play the field position game correctly against LSU. I mean, this becomes an incredibly important game for Rodrigo Blankenship. And for a lot of fans, they love the idea of Rodrigo being the center of attention. But Saturday in Death Valley, that's a Rodrigo game. I hate to bring up a bad memory here, but you know, you can go back to the 2003 game. An LSU team that ended up winning the national championship. George in the first half that day missed three field goals. A very good kicker missed three field goals. That's 9 points that Georgia could have gotten that it didn't get, and ultimately lost the game to LSU, and LSU went on to win the national championship. Georgia could have been this close. That's how important a field goal kicker can be in a Baton Rouge.
Yeah, it's funny, Brandon, we were actually in a different conversation. You weren't part of the mix, but I was talking about Georgia, maybe the differences in the Georgia years under Mark Richt and now under Kirby Smart. Those teams, those early Mark Richt teams, were perennial top five, top 10, top 15 teams. And remember how Georgia and Billy Bennett, they won all those games by field goal. Sure. Like a lot of fans used to call Georgia FGU or field goal U, yeah, because that's what they would always do. Remember that Facing the Giants movie where it was laughable how Mark Richt's cameo in that movie involves, I'm going to kick the field goal, go ahead and kick the field goal, even a 54-yarder.
Right.
It's just different. Georgia's been so dominant under Kirby Smart that Rodrigo's talents have not been pressed to the line,
right,
as much as they probably would need to. Is this a game where that happens? I'm very fond of saying, you look at Georgia's roster as a whole, and everybody out there, find me a player who does their job, who fulfills their job description, any better than Rodrigo,
yeah,
Blankenship. I think maybe Roquan did it last year. I think maybe Andrew Thomas is right there as well. And I know when we were at our Marlowe's event this week, does it seem like that was already so long ago?
It feels
Tuesday,
like 15 days ago, yeah.
I said, you know, everybody starts wondering about NFL dogs and who's going to clear up scholarships. I don't think the name Rodrigo Blankenship is mentioned enough as a guy that might look at all these kickers missing everything left and right, extra points in the NFL, and think, you know, no kicker's going to get picked in the, right, third or fourth round. But I think Rodrigo Blankenship is one of the better kickers in the country right now.
So I agree with a lot of what you're saying. In general, my philosophy is the best teams in the country aren't the ones that have the best kickers. They're the ones that use the kickers the least. I mean, in general, that's what good teams do. They find a way to make kickers irrelevant because they're scoring touchdowns instead of kicking field goals. But in a close game, in a tight battle, you want to have a better kicker than your opposition. And with Rodrigo Blankenship, Georgia's going to have that virtually every single Saturday.
I mean, I'm not trying to turn this into a kicker-only segment here of a Dog Nation Daily, but you look at Hot Rod, you look at Rodrigo, and then you look at the LSU kicker. I know you both bumped into some people yesterday at Hot 10 Room that the story about the LSU kicker, I think, is fascinating. He comes from, like, he was basically discovered from the lower rungs of college football.
Absolutely.
And Google that guy's name. Google that story. That is a great story if you want to sit there around the tailgate and tell him about that kicker at LSU.
Let me pause the conversation for a couple seconds. Say, that's Jeff Sintel. I'm Brandon Adams. Let me let our radio audience kind of regroup here for a little bit. You're listening to Dog Nation Daily. We got plenty more coming up right after this. And as promised, we really do have plenty more coming up with Dog Nation Daily here today. So we were talking about Rodrigo Blankenship, talking about the role that he might play. I also thought Matt Rukavina in our Facebook comment section also had a really interesting point a moment ago, that one of the interesting chess matches that I think is going to emerge on Saturday between Georgia and LSU, and of course we'll continue to take a lot of your comments here on both Facebook and YouTube, and I guess Twitter too. I guess we can squeak some of those in as well on this special edition of our program, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, live here at Manning's in New Orleans. But what Matt Rukavina brought up is the great chess match that's going to go on with how Mel Tucker, Kirby Smart, and this Georgia defense is defense against Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback, who is kind of a quarterback who is very much in the mold of previous LSU quarterbacks. More safe than sorry, not a lot of big throws necessarily, but not a lot of mistakes either. Through his first interception of the season last week against Florida, he's been very careful in that regard. He's been on the road now against tough opponents twice. He's played at Auburn, he's played at Florida, so he's had some experience in intense atmospheres. He'll have a friendly crowd behind him on Saturday. But do you think there's something that Tucker can do? There's something that Smart, through Mel Tucker, can do to confuse Burrow? You know, obviously we know that George wants to rush the pass without blitzing as much as it possibly can. But against Burrow, does dialing up more blitzes make more sense in the hope that you can encourage him to make a throw he otherwise, or at least attempt a throw that he otherwise wouldn't try to make, and just show him something that's difficult to replicate in practice? That's a great chess match, is it not?
I think confusion was a good word you used there, because everybody thinks, you know, football is reactionary. Whatever you didn't do well the previous week that got you beat, that's what'll be coached up and adjusted the next week in practice. Well, everybody saw how Florida, I guess, baffled Burrow and how they won that game. They brought a lot of pressure. They played an aggressive game plan defensively to try and confuse Burrow. Well, that's not Georgia's MO at all. I wonder if confusion might be the term for the day, because Georgia, they can either look at that film, Brandon, and they can go, yeah, let's just do that. Florida, he had a lot of trouble with that. Or Georgia can do what they do. And Georgia just wants to play its base defense, and they want to, everybody says bend, don't break. But Georgia, the ultimate for Georgia is to be able to get pressure off of their front. They base a lot in nickel. That's what they do now. But if they can bring four and get pressure out of that four, that's what they want to do. And I say this a lot. People look at that defense, and I challenge everybody out there to tell me. I think the best players on Georgia's team right now are in the secondary. The best part of that defense is the secondary. So why wouldn't you want to have Joe Burrow take on Georgia's secondary? Joe Burrow, I want you to beat us with our best players on there. We want to cover your guys and make you throw it, because that's where Georgia's best players on defense are.
I agree. And I thought Enrique Murillo in our YouTube comment section said something kind of interesting, that he doesn't believe that LSU has a chance to score 40 points in this game. Obviously, we've seen Georgia in every game but one this year score the 40. Now, I don't think that Georgia's going to score 40 tomorrow either, but one of the reasons why I do think that that Georgia's got a chance to, a very good chance to win this game, and why Georgia would be my pick to win, even if it's a close game, is because I do think what Georgia has shown offensively, Jeff, through the first six games of the season, is a difficult thing for LSU to match. We know we really haven't seen, whether it be Brossette or Edwards-Helaire, we really haven't seen a running back in the sort of Darius Geisler or Fournette role emerge for LSU yet. At the beginning of the season, I thought the LSU wide receivers were going to be outstanding. I think so far that group's kind of only been okay. They've been led by Jefferson, where I thought a guy like Jonathan Giles might have ended up being the leading receiver, maybe in a freshman like Terrace Marshall, the five-star that they brought in. You know, I just think that LSU offensively is not quite bringing the same level of firepower to this game that Georgia brings, and I think that's a big advantage for Georgia here. I think if it gets into a scoring situation where Georgia puts a couple points up early, a couple scores up early, I do think the pressure on Burrow and this Steve Ensminger-led LSU offense to match that becomes a very difficult thing to do.
So you were talking about the UGA vault and everything else like that. I mean, I'm sure they had clips of Ensminger in those games too.
Georgia offensive coordinator.
Gosh, that's one of those storylines that baffles me, that that guy is still, everybody calls him a old school, a grizzled veteran right now, but I think the contrast between what Aranda does and then what Ensminger does on the the coordinators of that LSU attack is very, very interesting, Brandon. And you know, I got something I just want to kick around with you right now. There's a guy, and I want you to look through this a little bit. There's a guy I think that has to play a game, like you said earlier this week, a painting type game. You know, one of those guys that has such a strong game that it becomes the subject of one of those talented artists out there or whatever.
You got Steve Pinley doing an oil painting of this thing at some point in time or something like that.
Oil painting. And it's not going to – I think to me, the guy that has a game like that, it's not going to be a lot of homework. I think it's going to be a guy like DeAndre Baker. Yeah. I think it's going to be a guy like DeAndre Swift, or it's going to be a guy like DeAndre Walker. It's the DeAndre show. I think those guys are the guys that Georgia – the instrument of the victory for a win.
Yeah.
If you had to pick one name that you think will be the chief instrument in Georgia getting it done on Saturday, who would be your choice?
I think that you gave good names with the DeAndres here, Walker and Baker on defense, but I hope I'm not making too much out of this, because I'm obviously going to partially speak as a fan when I say this. That touchdown that DeAndre Swift scored on Saturday against Vanderbilt was like old school DeAndre Swift. That was like December 2017 DeAndre Swift.
Yeah.
You know, there was a defender coming over to try to tackle him when he caught that ball, and Swift, I think, made the defender look like he took a terrible angle on the play. I'm not so sure it was such a bad angle. I just think DeAndre Swift put it in overdrive. I didn't know that Swift had that overdrive in him right now. It looks like he's been playing hobbled a bit in the first six games of the season. So right now, a lot of my enthusiasm about this game rests with Swift. And the other name I'll add into that is also Elijah Holyfield a little bit too. Holyfield didn't get a ton of carries last week. Georgia didn't really run the ball against Vanderbilt the number of times that we've come to expect them to run. But when Holyfield was running, he was also showing that spark too. I feel better about the Georgia running game going into LSU than I did going into Vanderbilt. Not compared to the opponents, just talking about what I've seen now from Georgia, that extra game, that extra data point. When it comes to Swift, when it comes to Holyfield, you know, James Cook got more carries a week ago. Obviously, Brian Herring's always been a back that I've, you know, had some confidence in.
Uh-huh.
But when you talk about, you know, who's the guy that can end up getting a painting made of them, a guy that can end up being a part of a Dog Nation lore after this, I think it's one of those running backs here based on what I saw against Vanderbilt.
I also think those are all good choices, and everybody please weigh in about that. Everybody could say Jake Fromm, or everybody could say that guy is going to, or Justin Fields would be a guy that has that signature game. I got two more that I was thinking about in the Uber ride over here. I was thinking of Jeremiah Holloman,
and
I was thinking of Terry Godwin. I think those guys are also guys that seem like it is their time to have a signature game for Georgia. And then I guess there's always the tight ends, Brandon. I mean, Nada needs to have a game, a two touchdown type game that really shows, you know, through his third year, his junior year. Really, in these games like this, it's the veteran players, the Terry Godwins, the Isaac Nodd is the guys that have been on campus for 3 years. Those older guys are usually the ones that makes the difference.
Yeah, and you know, the other day when Mike Griffith was on the show, he asked the question of, you know, hey, do you want the tight ends to get the football at the expense of a running back getting a touch, or at the expense of a wide receiver getting the touch? A touch for tight ends means a lack of an opportunity for one of those other skill position players. Is that what you want? And I kind of joked that Mike may be asking that in a rhetorical way, but I'm going to answer the question in a real way, that sometimes, Jeff, I would prefer the tight end to get the ball instead of another player. Not because I necessarily think Nauta and Warner are better than the wide receivers or running backs. I think they're all potentially outstanding playmakers. But LSU is the perfect opponent where it just seems like tight end usage could be really important. Now, you've also got to make the decision of how much max protect do you want to do to give Fromm or Fields when he's in the game more time to throw. But you know, with Devin White being an outstanding linebacker, with Grant Delpit being an outstanding safety, you want those guys having to think about stuff, right? You want them not only, you know, making a beeline towards the football, but having to keep the head on the swivel to see if 18 or 89 is blocking, or is that guy trying to run a route here? Because that just becomes one more thing for the middle of the defense to think about, or, you know, deep center to think about in some respects. So in a game like this, how you use your tight ends, when do you choose to block them? When do you choose to run routes? Against this opponent, because LSU defensively is so good up the middle, so good in that kind of center portion of the field, I just think tight ends are more important in this game than they are even in another game. And obviously, you know, I'm right there with the rest of the Georgia fans who are always hoping to see more of those guys.
It's funny, Kirby even makes light of that a little bit, lightheartedly kidding with the press corps after games. He was like, what does that mean about using the tight ends? It means you guys won't be able to throw stats and write about that type of stuff this week.
I may resemble that remark a bit.
I got I got a. Hopefully, this is a show 802 worthy stat drop. Right. I'm going to make right now.
All right.
I don't know if it was a comment. I don't know if it was a candid comment you just made a second ago about LSU scoring 30 on Georgia. Do you realize? I hope everybody else out there realizes it. And I want to. Maybe I'll test the BA brain this morning very early. See how many cups of coffee he has. How many times has an opponent scored more than 30 points on the Georgia defense under Kirby Smart?
Jeez.
This is why I say it is very, very rare, Brandon.
Yeah, I guess Missouri would have. Oklahoma would have. Auburn, unfortunately, would have. Anybody else?
So you got Kirby and Mel have been at Georgia for 3 years. There was one game in his first year where Tennessee, they hit the Hail Mary.
Yeah, I forgot about 2016. I've sort of blocked 2016 completely out of my memory at this point in time. Ole Miss and everything that happened that season.
So here's what you got. You remember Missouri was at 28 and 29. They never hit 30.
Okay.
But you've got the Tennessee game. They've got the Auburn game you mentioned right there. And then you've also got the Oklahoma game. Those are the only three times this defense has ever given up more than 30 points.
So does that mean that 30 is a magic number here? Does Georgia need 30 to win tomorrow? And does 30, I don't want to say guarantee a victory, but 30 becomes the thing of once you hit that magic number, the recipe for how likely you are to win completely changes. Do you look at 30 as a magic number?
I look at 30 as a magic number because Georgia just simply doesn't give up that many points. If you look at Georgia so far under Smart and Tucker, the way they play defense, the way they do it with their athletes and their schemes, I think they want to keep teams around 14 to 17. If you look at most of their wins, the stats will show that Georgia keeps them around 14 points. I think the stats right now are Georgia's giving up about 13 points per game. They got the number 6 total defense in the country with only 283 yards per game. But you look at Georgia football, it's got to be built. The blueprint's got to be built defensively. But when you look through that, you start going Tennessee Hail Mary. Okay, Baker Mayfield and Oklahoma and all those overtimes. They had 30 points in the first half, if everybody remembers that one out there in the Rose Bowl. But aside from that, not a lot of teams are scoring more than 4 touchdowns on Georgia. And that's one of the signatures right now so far of the Kirby Smart era.
Robert Barnes in our Facebook comment section kind of agrees with me on the blocking out 2016 from memory. It's almost like a bad trauma experience that I have no recollection of. He goes, I agree, BA. That was like the preseason. So basically 2016 was the preseason for the real seasons here in 2017 and 18.
You remember that Nickel State game where it was like 26-22?
I wrote about that a few weeks ago at Dog Nation, how it seems like that game against Nichols happened to a different program in a different era. But it wasn't, I mean, chronologically speaking, it wasn't that long ago. And that's kind of the reason why I wrote about that, because it just seems so crazy that could have happened to this Georgia program given where it is right now.
Louisiana Lafayette, you remember that game that was so close, and you remember the Tech loss and the Vanderbilt loss. You remember Notori Johnson in there in the crowd?
Yeah, that Notori Johnson photo that is so great in Dog Nation of him with his head down and doing like this, bored to tears and a little bit sad. That's a great, great photo that really encapsulates just how rough that era was.
And it's so much different. Like, you know, you look back in Georgia, and this is going to get into the crevices of one's mind right now, but Georgia, they beat TCU to end that year.
Yeah.
And then that was coming off the disappointing loss to Tech, but they beat TCU to end that year. And they end the note with a win, and then they go 13-2. So when you look at Georgia now, Georgia's won 20 out of its last 22 games under Kirby Smart. Since things have kind of gotten rolling, the way things are going. And, you know, that's one stat. There's one stat I don't think got enough attention last week, and it was Georgia. I don't know how much you talked about it on your program with your listeners, but Georgia, for the first time in its history, is 6-0 in back-to-back years.
Yeah.
I mean, think about Georgia football for a second. Look at all those wins and all those really great teams. This is the first time Georgia has ever been 6-0 in successive years. Quite a stat right there.
Yeah, that is a very impressive stat. Note about that. That's Jeff Sintel. My name's Brandon Adams. Let me remind you that we're here live here at Manning's in New Orleans for a special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. And we're thankful to have you joining us as a part of our Dog Nation Invasion. Don't forget, coming up later on today, we've got a special Dog Nation Invasion preview broadcast. It'll be back here. If you're in New Orleans, I'll mention this in Central Time because we'd love to have you join us. You can't see this on camera, but in front of us right now, what a great way to watch football. They've got like two rows, I'm talking about wide rows of the classic theater style style seating where you can, you know, kick back, relax, and recline. And normally the Dog Nation Invasion logo you see behind us is normally that's a TV that you can watch. So if you want to come be a part of our Dog Nation Invasion preview show this afternoon, you got a very comfortable spot to see. The food here at Manning's is great. I've heard people raving about that since we've been here in New Orleans. Fulton Street's a beautiful part of the city right next to O'Hara's. So come on by here and see us for that. And of course, Dog Nation Invasion rolls on tomorrow as well, as we're live there for our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate at the Walk-Ons on Burbank Drive in Baton Rouge starting 11 a.m. Central Time. So come see us for that. Huge thanks to all of our sponsors who make that possible. Our friends from Kroger, Marlowe's, R.S. Andrews, and of course, Skyland Brookhaven. Big thanks to all of them. Once again, for the final time, let me pause for our radio audience here and say thank you for being a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. We've got plenty more of the program coming up, and it's great to have you with us. And with that said, Jeff, let's get back into our conversation here just for a moment. And you were talking about 30 being a magic number for points. And, you know, that might be the total that signifies the victory there for UGA. I don't want to get too lost in the weeds on this, but is there a chance it could be less than that? If you're a Georgia fan and you tell them, hey, you're going to get 30 points, every Georgia fan, you know, feels like that has a chance to be a win. Let's say you knock that total down to 27. What does that do to the confidence level? That FPI percentage chances of win, and we see on the ESPN graphics all the time, how does the percentage chance of win for Georgia likely change? If it's not 30, now it's 27. Well, you know, a smaller point total, how does it change?
Yeah, when somebody's, if you look through just like 3 years of stats, if you look to it, when someone's gotten to Georgia defense a little bit and had their success, they've been around that 27, 28, 29 point range. I think the Missouri games come to mind right there. You remember when Tech beat, let's go back to 2016, we're beating that horse today, but like 28-27. That's how Tech beat Georgia in that situation in the 2006 game, which was the Chubb start game, which made him want to come back and play for Georgia. But I think that's the sort of thing. And how can they happen? How can they be accomplished? Special teams play some sort of in the return game or whatever. But this is the type of game where I think this is not rocket science here. We're not trying to make the best beignet on Bourbon Street right here. This is the type of game where two physical football teams are going to scheme up everything offensively and defensively. We're going to knock this guy back. We're going to take our shots. Coach Orgeron said that he's got a different game plan for Justin Fields and Jake Fromm in there. And I think that's playing into Jim Chaney's hands a little bit. The more time you spend preparing on both of them, the less time you can spend preparing on everything that one guy brings to the table. But special teams, we started talking about Rodrigo a little bit. This is a game where, you know, Mecole Hardman's been a little bit dry. Like after that brilliant start to this season, we've got two games now where he hasn't gotten in the end zone yet. And he's itching, I know, to get back in there. This is a game that feels like a Mecole Hardman Jr. punt return, a Mecole Hardman Jr. jet sweep, a Mecole-type kick return. This is one of those games when you start putting together a great career, which is what Hardman is doing at Georgia, doing something special in Baton Rouge would add to his legacy.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's very well said. Now, I want to talk a lot more about the Georgia-LSU game, but here on Dog Nation Daily, as we take more comments, John Williams Adams also brings up an important question. He says, which uncommitted recruit on the LSU sidelines is looking harder at Georgia than LSU? And that does lead us into something I wanted to do, at least spend a couple of minutes talking about the recruiting angle here. I know you've written about this. It really is pretty amazing. You know, Georgia and LSU, for years and years, just did not cross paths in recruiting whatsoever. It's kind of ironic. If you want to go back to the early 2000s, they were actually playing a good bit. They played four times in 3 years from 2003 to 2005, but never with, like, Louisiana kids on the Georgia roster, I guess with the exception of Terrell Biera. You know, very few Georgia kids on the Louisiana roster, the LSU roster, for the most part. And yet now, here it is, these two teams haven't played in forever, not in Athens since 2013, not in LSU since 2008. Yeah, all of a sudden, they are battling it out over a whole bunch of recruits. Current Georgia commits, Micaiah Tong. Current Georgia commits, John Emery Jr. There have been some rumors going back a couple months ago about Ty Davis, who's an LSU commit. N'Kobe Dean, who Georgia fans have zeroed in on as one of the top five remaining targets of this class. The scuttlebutt out there is his last official visit is going to belong to LSU. How interesting is it now that all of a sudden Georgia and LSU are all of a sudden major recruiting rivals when for a couple decades they didn't battle over any players, it seems.
Yeah, I thought it was phenomenal. And you mentioned Terrell Biera out of Slidell, Louisiana. He showed up
through Slidell, Louisiana, yesterday.
You slid through Slidell, but like so. that was 1999 when he joined the program, 1998. But this century, Brandon, and you can finally start throwing out those whopper statements like this century. I went and crunched the numbers, and there's only been one guy Georgia had pulled out of the state of Louisiana. That was Michael Chigbu, a three-star receiver. You call him a wide receiver, you call him a wide blocker, whatever you want to call him, what he's been at Georgia. That's the only time Georgia has signed a player out of the state of Louisiana this century. And look what they're doing this year with Micaiah Tung, who had varying degrees of interest from LSU. But then, obviously, John Emery Jr., I've gotten to spend a lot of time with him here this week, and he actually plays tonight for everybody in the New Orleans area who has invaded. If you want to go see a big ball game in the future of Georgia football, Destrehan High School. It's right on the river, really beautiful, right on the Ormond Plantation. It's only about 20 miles away from downtown New Orleans, 20, 25 miles, and they've got a big game tonight. They're placing another foe in the Catholic League that is 5-1, off to a really good start. And you can see John Emery play for future Georgia five-star running back John Emery play, but your point, there are other names like Cardell Thomas, the big five-star offensive guard who liked Georgia so much that LSU said, you can't take your official visit there. He really liked Sam Pittman a lot, but it's just different with Georgia now. They're going to go get their guys, and they're never going to get the best five players out of the state of Louisiana, but they might get one or two, the ones that they really want, the ones that they send Dell McGee to go get, like they did with John Emery Jr. Remember, Georgia was the first school that offered John Emery Jr., and you sit there and you go, I think one of the most interesting stats right now about Georgia recruiting is with the recent decommitments, we'll call them decommitments, from those boys in-state, you see Georgia right now with only three commitments from the state of Georgia amongst the from Texas, by way of Boston, by way of Haiti. And you look at there, and you've only got three guys that are currently committed to Georgia, and everybody can rattle them off with me. That's Rylan Goede, sure, Dominic Blaylock, and also Trezman Marshall.
Right.
The rest of them, Georgia is going to get their guys who they feel are the best players in the country rather than just getting all those homegrown guys.
And, of course, a Georgia commit that's not currently living in the state of Georgia but initially from the state of Georgia is Nolan Smith, the five-star pass rusher listed as a defensive end, probably not side linebacker, Georgia. There's also a lot of rumor and innuendo out there with Nolan Smith right now. What can you tell us about what's happening with Smith, a guy whose recruitment seems to always, you know, have a little drama attached to it. Maybe not quite as intensely as we think of when it comes to Jaden Hazelwood, but he's not a Dominic Blaylock either. He's not a Lewis Cine either, someone who has locked it down completely. It sounds like Nolan Smith is still, I don't want to say shopping around. Actually, I don't know what to say. What's going on with Nolan Smith? You tell me what to say.
You want me to say something to make you a little bit worried and wake you up a little bit?
No, just forecast it.
Here's Nolan, and this is Nolan's situation as I see it right now. It's becoming more and more the norm when they get these five official visits, they want to take him. Nolan is a guy that he's the senior commitment in the class. People got to remember, this is exactly how I see the Nolan Smith situation right now. He committed to Georgia in January of 2017, and he's been at IMG Academy now since right about that time. That's a boarding school. That's the boarding school in Bradenton, Florida. And IMG's seasons are different than the normal high school season. They don't play for a state title because of the Florida High School Athletic Association won't allow them to play in the playoffs because they're basically a boarding school that recruits nationally. So when IMG lost earlier this year, a really good game against Mater Dei in California, that took them out of the national championship picture. And then also their season will end at the end of October. So Nolan is going to have a lot of time in November to take his officials because their season will be done. And he won't really have anything to do until the All-American game. And he's going to take his five officials. Guess what happens on an official visit? It's a lot better than hanging out at the boarding school in Florida in November when you don't have any games to play, no more practices left to do.
NCAA rules allow you to roll out the red carpet, which is
correct.
A very difficult thing to say no to. I don't really fault him for taking visits, and I've told you this 1,000 times, both on and off the air. If you want to swim in the deepest recruiting waters possible, you've got to be okay with guys who want to take visits. If you want to be like Georgia Tech or Oklahoma State or one of these programs that recruits, you know, nothing but three-star players, you can tell them not to take visits, and for the most part, they'll do that because you're just not dealing with the same caliber of athlete. But if you want to be at the very top of the food chain here, you know, you're going to have some predators on the other side as well. You're going to have some guys who are looking to take visits, and they're getting strong strong pitches from other programs, and I think Georgia sells itself even when Nolan Smith is in Tuscaloosa or Clemson or Columbus. I think that Georgia as a program still sells itself when a guy like that, you know, has boots on the ground somewhere else. And I feel the same way about Jaden Hazelwood at Miami last week. My confidence level is that Hazelwood in South Florida a week ago probably saw a lot of things about Miami that reminded him of how good he really has it at Georgia.
Yeah, so Smith tweeted it out that he's going to take his officials and it's going to start with Alabama. Nolan's official to Georgia should take place after this season when all the locked-in commitments are going to be there to kind of pry loose the very biggest remaining targets for the class of 2019. But I want everybody to really take a good look at that Nolan Smith situation and realize that this is the point I want to just boldface and italicize. Nolan has going to have basically a free November to work with. And that's just a different high school mechanism than other players have to deal with. If Nolan, as good of a player he is, they should be playing three or four games in the month of November. They should be preparing, and that's one of those weekends where he doesn't want to take focus away from his team. He doesn't have that, and I think that's a unique way to look at IMG Academy, the fact that they're no longer in the national title chase, and otherwise that guy's going to have nothing to do for most of November. That's a way to look at that. I think he'll probably take an official visit to Alabama. I think he'll take one of those longer trips on the coast afterward. The other schools that are always associated with Nolan would have to be Clemson, but he doesn't really mess with a lot of people. Like, his recruiting has been Georgia and just a couple of schools for at least over a year now, and he's one of the best players in the country who hasn't totally shut it down. That has, you just wonder who's going to be the fourth and fifth official visit for Nolan Smith. Is that a UCLA? Is that a USC? Is he going to go out to a Texas? Is he going to go down to Miami and take that visit as well? I don't think he's going to take that one because he's already in South Florida.
K9 Blues in our YouTube comment section also mentioning that when you look at what Georgia's set to lose here with guys like Jonathan Ledbetter leaving the program soon, you know, for a guy like Smith, who's been around the camp circuit for a long time, got a lot of experience battling against top flight competition there at IMG Academy, he could step in and be, you know, potentially an early playing time guy at Georgia. It's not an easy thing to do, but he could potentially do it, which is one of the reasons why he may stay strong to UGA. That enticement to UGA is intense for him.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. I don't know how many people follow Nolan on the gram or follow him on Snapchat, but like, he just spent, I think, Wednesday to Saturday last week in Georgia. I think he went to the basketball games. I think he probably showed up at Canes a lot, which is what everybody does. But he was in the weight room. He checked out the new recruiting lounge. He was at the game. Had a great time.
Just for one second, I don't mean to interrupt you. Let me get ready to say goodbye to our radio audience. Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks so much for being with us. We got great Dog Nation Invasion coverage at the weekend. We'll see you back here Monday on 960 The Ref. Y'all have a terrific weekend. All right, sorry to interrupt you, Jeff. I just want to make sure we said goodbye to our radio audience before they leave us there. We're still live on video, though, and the podcast today, we'll go ahead and put the full thing in here today. Normally, we end the podcast when the radio show ends, but we'll give the podcast audience a little bonus coverage. Sorry for interrupting you. Go ahead and finish your point.
Yeah, he just spent an extended visit at Georgia. I'm sure the conversation was had that, hey, guys, I'm going to go take my visits. Just want to let you know that. I mean, listen, everything that Nolan saw across those 4 or 5 days at the University of Georgia campus, I think it's going to be hard for any other school to match that, just what he saw based off his last experiences in Athens.
All right, when we do this, it's become one of my favorite parts of Before the Hedge, is presented by Kroger every Wednesday, and that is our hurry up. We try to take as many questions and comments as we can.
Sure.
Can we do this on recruiting the game Saturday? Can I have everything in between?
Uh-huh.
And we'll do both, YouTube and Facebook. We'll try to fly through and get as many of these as we can. Nicole House, a good point, says don't forget the Gator Hater Countdown. Nicole, that's a really good point. Let me make sure I do that. 15 days from right now, Georgia beats Florida again in Jacksonville. It's our Gator Hater Countdown. Nicole, you are a true patriot for reminding me to make sure we got that in 15 days from now, Gator Hater Countdown. Which, by the way, I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, that's the next game after this one. Can you imagine how much fun the next 2 weeks are going to be getting ready for a probably a little bit more exciting cocktail party than I initially thought it was going to be on the heels of a Georgia win against LSU on Saturday? It's good times, Jeff.
I think
we're rolling right from New Orleans and Baton Rouge to Jacksonville. You can't get much better than that.
Keep the bags packed, except for
we just go straight there. I don't know if I can get clearance from my bosses to do that. We may actually just just travel straight from Louisiana onto Florida there and stay there for 2 weeks.
Another city by the water, another city with one of those genteel breezes blowing through.
And yeah, that's not bad.
Here's the thing. Georgia's going to go – you want to talk about the sweet spot of the season. Georgia's going to go through LSU, Florida, Kentucky, all in a three-game stretch. It's going to make November feel a little bit tamer by comparison when you've got the likes of UMass, you've only got Auburn at home, and you've got Georgia Tech as well. This is the best three-game stretch of the season without any question.
Four-game stretch. I mean, you know, the four games over five weeks between LSU and Florida and Kentucky and Auburn, you're going to learn a lot. You know, that's really been one of the themes of our conversation this week is, for all the, well, how good is Georgia really talk? All that ends. I mean, and as a fan, if Georgia's not good enough to win the national championship, I'd rather go ahead and find out right now. You know, go ahead and find out over the course of the next few weeks. I don't believe that's what I'm going to learn, but if it were to be true, then let's just go ahead and learn it right now. Four games over 5 weeks against teams that have all, with the exception of Auburn, three have proven to be kind of better than I think at the beginning of the season we thought they would be. Auburn's still a tough foe. I mean, this is a real proving ground for Georgia.
Yeah, let's channel some of that evil Brandon Adams personality that shows up on Twitter sometimes. Let's say Georgia gets it done 31-20 on Saturday.
Yep.
That's an acceptable victory margin. That would be a check all boxes type win for you, correct?
Let me tell you something. If Georgia wins this game 31-20, that's not an acceptable win. That is a bold print, emphatic statement with three exclamation marks at the end. National champions come to LSU and win 31-20.
So what will be the narrative? What do you think would be the sayers of nay? What's the national narrative about Georgia after this one?
Well, there better not be a whisper. If it's 31-20, there better not be a whisper.
Like, you know, everybody says we need to find out if Georgia is that good. If I think that the ESPN crew is hitting hard about, they need to justify their number two ranking that they're that good. I even think Professor Herbstreit had some of those questions this week as well. And
yeah, we played some audio of Herbstreit yesterday.
What's left to say? And I think it's an example of what do you still need to learn about this Georgia football team? Like Ed Orgeron and those coordinators we just spoke about a minute ago are going to try and kick the tires on this machine to find out a way to beat Georgia. And to me, you look at it, are there any unproven elements about this team? Or maybe a great performance for Georgia, the national narrative is then more Fromm, more Fields, more of that, you know, artificial, NutraSweet conversation that they love.
You're saying, like, part of the Fromm Fields thing is, it's partially based on the fact that they're both really good and they're both really entertaining. So there's always going to be a lot of attention paid to good, entertaining football players. But the other part of the intensity around the Fromm Fields conversation is just garden variety boredom. I mean, when you're beating, you know, Vanderbilt and, you know, Sisters of the Poor, whoever else that Georgia's played here for the first six games, when you're beating them up by 40 points, people are just going to get bored with the end result. They're going to look to the you know, intermediate results during the game here. There's not going to be as much Fromm and Fields talk coming off this game on Saturday if Georgia plays the way that you said. Now, if Georgia squeaks by 17-13 and the offense doesn't perform very, really well, at that point in time, you better buckle your chin strap because there's probably going to be a lot of Fromm and Fields following. But if it's 31-20 and Georgia's just steamrolling its way to the cocktail party, then the conversation, the narrative is going to quickly evolve in a way that it has not really been all season long.
I think the only thing left for Georgia, should they get the deed done on Saturday, should they get the deed done on Saturday, I think the biggest, maybe big storyline left was Georgia in a national chase, a national title type chase, or just a national perception of Georgia. Might be a little critical here when I say this, but I still feel if you want to look towards that Alabama matchup, I don't think Georgia has a true number one receiver. I don't think Georgia has a guy that's going to blitz the Alabama defense. Remember, the Alabama secondary is young like Georgia's as well. I don't know if they've got a guy that can take over a game.
Yeah, I don't necessarily. We'll learn that come December. My point is, if you gave me the score 31-20, if that's the score you want to give me, that's a big-time conversation upgrade in terms of how people evaluate Georgia. Now, Ninja the Noob on YouTube says, people would just say that Georgia's only played and beaten one good team. There might be some of that, but the last time Alabama was here, they won 10-0, okay? They won by 10 points, only scored 10 points against the LSU defense. So if Georgia comes in here and in a winning effort puts up 30 points, 30 or more points, That's a massive statement. And, and at that point in time, it doesn't matter if you're playing Fromm or Fields. What you're playing is working because you're scoring points against a good defense in its own stadium.
Well, there's so many Alabama teams that have came to LSU, and be thankful that that's an afternoon game and not a night game. But there's so many Alabama teams that have came here. Those great championship talent-laden stocked rosters, guys like Derrick Henry, T.J. Yeldon in the backfield, Mark Ingram, those sort of players, and they squeak out those 17-7s, those 13-6s type victories and everything else. It is a different place to play, and you know, for folks that are in New Orleans right now, for folks that are coming into the game, I was speaking to B.A. before we went on the air. This is B.A. is going to check off another SEC stadium
this
week.
Right. Yeah, I've never been to a Tiger Stadium, Death Valley. I'm really excited about that. You know, in addition to being like a huge Georgia fan, I've also been like the biggest SEC homer my entire life, right? I mean, I just, you know, y'all know how obsessed with this league I am. That's why I love, you know, talking about the SEC every single day. In addition to talking about Georgia, I love talking about the rest of this league because I appreciate the pageantry and I appreciate the history and the tradition that this conference puts together. And being in Baton Rouge tomorrow, a college football town that knows how to do it from the morning tailgate to the post-game party, I mean, how could you not want to be right there? Now, obviously, with wearing red and black right now, clearly I want the result to go a certain way, but in terms of just celebrating the environment, celebrating the spectacle, I mean, how could you not want to beat as many of these SEC stadiums as you can be?
Yeah, you'll see the tiger in the cage on the sidelines. And
I want to see the cage where they keep Ed Orgeron. That's what I really want to see.
You're just interested in that post-game press conference. You want to look for the sign language person in the corner or whatever at Ed Orgeron press conference.
Anyway, speaking of post-game, we will have our Northside Hospital post-game show on the field tomorrow after the game, so we're really excited about that. So if you want to, if you're a regular watcher of our post-game coverage, you'll get to see the cool backdrop of Death Valley. Hopefully you'll see me smiling. Whatever the result is, I'll be wearing my emotions on my face. You'll be able to see that. So we'll have Northside Hospital post-game show on the field. I have to admit, I'm going to give us about a D- for our hurry-up here. I don't know that we actually end up taking, you know, I think we took a couple comments.
Let's rip through them right now. Let's go.
Right, but we got to get ready to go, too, because we've been on the air for like 6 hours. All right, so Nager Yang says he's got Georgia 41-28 over LSU. How does that score sound to you?
I don't see LSU scoring that many points.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Ninja the Noom says, if we come out of Death Valley with a win, we still have more to do. Ninja's right about that. I think the LSU win in itself would be a massive statement, but it doesn't change the fact that, as Ninja points out, the next three games, Florida, Kentucky, Auburn, they're all really tough.
Yeah, these are the games these guys are recruited to Georgia for. They come to Georgia for. These are one of those times. Georgia has kicked around some tomato cans so far this year. This roster, those players, they relish those type of max effort days.
All right, serious point here from Brian Loverling, or Lovering, I guess. I apologize, Brian. He says, LSU's got one of the best secondaries in the nation. They'll press our receivers and stack the box. Can't wait to see our passing game blow people away. It is an interesting challenge because we've talked a lot about Grant Delpit, the safety this week, but Greedy Williams as a cornerback is, I don't think he's probably quite as good as DeAndre Baker, but he's a DeAndre Baker-style cornerback for LSU. So between Greedy and Delpit and whatever position Jacoby Stevens happens to be playing this week, I mean, that's a pretty good back group there for that LSU defense.
Very interesting, the whole dynamic there. You bring up Jacoby Stevens as well.
Because he was playing like outside linebacker the other day. He's played every position on the field.
LSU, they got to have – LSU, when they play LSU, it's not because of the Tigers and how many people stay up and tailgate and make it an event. The reason why LSU is so tough is they have those future NFL defenders, and that's the reason why those guys are like, they trot out DBU a lot, and it's deserved because they have all the defensive backs in the country.
All right, Green Soldier asks, along the lines of attacking that LSU secondary, do you see us opening up another 2-minute offense, or are we going to play a more conservative approach? Here's what's frustrating to a lot of fans, and Isaac Knott even said this postgame, Jeff. When it comes to the offense that Georgia ran at the end of the half against Vanderbilt, there are a lot of people who say, why don't they just do that all the time?
Well, it's almost like it's in their back pocket and they don't want to break it out. Because I'll tell you why. Because Kirby doesn't want to have that defense on three and outs.
That's true.
Everything Georgia do is predicated on the way they play defense. Physical, run-first football. Yeah, it's great to wear somebody down. But the more you're controlling the clock and keeping that other sideline off the field, the better those defensive stats look.
It is worth pointing out, though, that when Lane Kiffin was at Alabama from 2014 through 2016, they played up-tempo without sacrificing the running game. That's really the dream, right? You want to be able to play up-tempo in the kind of the two-minute style, the way that Georgia showed against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, but you don't want to sacrifice tired offensive linemen and not being able to run the football as a way of making that happen. If you could ever find a way to marry both those, you're not putting your defense in a bad spot at that point in time. You're just brutalizing your opponent.
I mean, you give Fromm the ball and have him spread guys out and all those receivers and those routes, those high-low NFL-level concept routes that Georgia likes to run, and I think that's Georgia, and that's Fromm operating at their very best.
But Mike Acorg on the same subject says, do you see Georgia going up-tempo as much as possible against LSU? So to bring it back to the initial question of, is LSU a good opponent to play up-tempo against?
I just think, you know, this is going to sound like a press conference answer, but I think Georgia is going to take what LSU gives them, and depending on the situation. I mean, if Georgia didn't have to go hurry up in that situation against Vanderbilt last week, would anybody have ever seen that flash and everybody's like, oh, that's the Georgia offense I've been waiting all season to see? They had that ability to go 2 minute because they needed that score to put more points on the board, and that's why they needed to show that they could do. Because remember, folks, when was the only other time this season that Georgia had the ability to go up tempo when they had to score fast before a half?
When?
I don't think that was the only one.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. I thought that was a trivia question.
No trivia question.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're right. That's the only time. Let me finish with this. Charles Abby Sanders says, has Alabama been challenged this year? I hear ESPN talk about Georgia's schedule, but does not mention if Alabama deserves to be number one. So I kind of agree with where Charles and Abby are coming from here, because there is a narrative out there that, you know, Alabama is so dominant, but that dominant narrative doesn't quite pay attention to who Alabama has played quite as much. I mean, in terms of the Georgia-Alabama comparison, if Georgia can play well against LSU, the Georgia is going to step up a level in terms of that comparison against the Crimson Tide, because Alabama, as of yet, has not played a game like this. Now, Alabama's got to come to Baton Rouge in November, but as of right now, if you're looking for Georgia closing the gap on Alabama, beating LSU on the road is a pretty good way to do that.
I think, you know, the matchup that all SEC fans, including, you know, self-described SEC homers like yourself, is waiting to look for. What if Georgia has one of those measuring stick games against LSU, and everybody's going to compare ad nauseum Georgia and Alabama the rest of the way? What if Georgia puts up an effort that everybody's going to start looking at what the Crimson Tide did against LSU as a way of comparing these two teams as well? Because what Georgia does here again in Death Valley, that is a different standard for how Kirby Smart and this football team will be measured.
That's exactly right. So that's Jeff Sintel. I mean, I think the bottom line from our conversation here, and I hope this is what you take from it, is this is an incredibly important game for Georgia. You already know that. Against an opponent, even though it lost a week ago, that can be incredibly dangerous. This could be one of the great proving grounds for Georgia this season. This could be a Saturday where we leave Baton Rouge saying, wow, we learned something really good about UGA. Somebody stepped up on one side of the ball or the other and became a hero, became a part of a Dog Nation folklore. As you can probably tell, I am really excited about this game, and one of the cool things about being in New Orleans is seeing thousands and thousands of other Georgia fans who are just as excited. This is an incredible time.
So you stumbled on maybe one of my biggest points so far of the week, and it is so different, Brandon. Like, the buzz, if you want to know what it's like to be in New Orleans right now and you bump into people that are LSU fans or whatever, is you hear this narrative a lot, especially because there's a lot of Georgia people around, but the LSU fans are like, y'all take it easy on us, okay? And they're meeting the Georgia team.
Yeah.
And they're like, we just hope we can play with you guys.
That's sandbagging. Don't listen to that.
No, but sandbag. But the narrative, just the overall perspective I take on that, Brandon, is like, who in the world would have thought that this program, number two in the country, is coming to New Orleans to face LSU in Death Valley, and the opposition is saying stuff like, we don't have the team you guys have. It's some way that shows how quickly Georgia is. I never thought I'd cover this game and be covering Georgia football games where Georgia is going in to play LSU, and there is not that fear factor. There is not, we have to play our best football to win. It's LSU right now in the college football food chain is looking up to Georgia as a big brother in the SEC. Yeah. I never thought that would happen.
So we appreciate you being a part of this very special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks to them for making it possible. Also, Dog Nation Invasion, the big sign you see behind us. All of that wouldn't be possible without the great folks who made Dog Nation Invasion as much fun as they've made it. We're happy to celebrate with them this weekend. Our friends from Kroger and Marlowe's, R.S. Andrews and Skyland Brookhaven. We got a big event coming up later on today. So if you're at work, make plans to join us. Maybe sneak out a little early or go in the conference room, whatever. 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, we bring you our Dog Nation Invasion special preview broadcast as we look back to some of the great moments in the history history of Georgia versus LSU, and also ahead to a great game on Saturday. Former Georgia greats like DJ Shockley will have interviews with them. Highlights from our friends at the UGA Vault, which you can download the UGA Vault app and see some more of those yourself. Larry Munson calls, classic moments from him. It's going to be an awesome broadcast. And if you're in New Orleans, many of you right now are watching from New Orleans. If you're in New Orleans, you're going to be here live at Manning's, where we are right now. One of the nicest, coolest sports bars you'll ever see. In New Orleans, live at 3 p.m. Central Time. We'd love to have you join us. And the good news is we also have some Dog Nation Invasion t-shirts that we can be giving away there as well. So we'll look forward to seeing you there for that. It's going to be incredible. Thank you so much for being a part of our special edition of Dog Nation Daily here today. Y'all enjoy your weekend. I'll be back in our Atlanta studios for a normal show back again on Monday. We'll have Jeff Sintel a lot next week as well. For now, though, let's get ready to enjoy a great Dog Nation Invasion weekend. Thank you all for being a part of it.